Because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are listening to this podcast, live, or listening to it later. Again, I want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman, as well as Dr. Keelan Hinton. Again, we are here, your two favorite psychologists, here for all of your mental health, love, relationships, social, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, who have questions, comments, or suggestions, you can send us comments, questions, or suggestions at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. Okay. Or again, as we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University, as well as WMEL, for giving us this platform. But as we always say, any of the questions, comments, or suggestions that you hear on this show are not supported by WMUL or Marshall University, are not supported by any of their sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives, ideas, and comments of Dr. Nate Chapman, as well as myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton. Are you there, Dr. Chapman?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. How you doing today?
Good, good. Doing good. Blessed.
Yeah, yeah. As I always say, I'm better than I deserve, better than I deserve. And again, as we always say, while part of what you may hear, it may be therapeutic, but as Dr. Chapman, as you always say, it is not what?
I think it is important for you to remember, though we are, our role based on our career is psychologists. We are not functioning right now in a clinical role, just having some conversations, hoping you get some useful information. But it won't stand up in court if you say that we did therapy. We're not.
All right, all right. Deepest apologies that we usually go from 9 to 10, and we'll probably go a little bit past 9 today to get our full hour in. My deepest apologies to both of us. It's the beginning of the semester for me, and Dr. Chapman's busy as well in sunny California. I know that sounds like an oxymoron, busy in sunny California, but we're both a little bit busy, so we got a little bit late start today. Our deepest apologies, but we're going to rock and roll, and we're going to make sure we get it done today. So again, just a quick check-in. How are things? How's the world? The inauguration was today. You know,
yeah,
everyone seems to be responding. I've seen some extremes. People are extremely upset or they're extremely happy, which is interesting.
Oh, you've seen both extremes. I think, at least in my timeline, the only real chatter I've seen is mostly people have been happy. Maybe it's just, you know, with the algorithms, Facebook's not really showing me everybody, but most people seem happy.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of both. You know, I've seen people say your gas is going to be $10 a gallon in the next year, get ready. And I've seen the other side of the extreme as well. So, but again, you know, no matter people's political affiliation, we're all Americans. We got to figure out how to get along, how to get past it. And I think that we will. You know, I think we will.
I mean, I think it's interesting because I'm thinking back to when 45 was put into office and the reaction and response that happened then for a lot of people, or a number of people anyways, I know it's not everybody in America felt that way. There was a lot of distress. And what I noticed today was a certain amount of relief, you know, a certain amount of like, oof. I mean, like, it was a reminder what it felt like to me, what I was thinking about when I was processing it is, I don't know if you ever had the experience of being in a heavy load of some type of debt, and then you do what you can to pay it off, and then you make that last payment, and you're like, whew, I'm about to be able to feel free. I know people, some people don't feel like that, but I'm just saying, in my timeline, sort of what it looked like.
Yeah, yeah. It made me think about, I've seen some extremes. It made me think about when, again, I talk about refereeing all the time. And I had an older ref tell me, look, son, every time you blow that whistle, somebody's going to be mad. Somebody's going to like you and somebody's going to be mad. And that's just how it is. No matter what you do, 50% of the people are going to hate you and 50% of the people are going to like you. Just go do your best. and that's all you could do. And when I would lose a baseball game as a kid, I'd be in the backseat crying, and my dad, no empathy at all, would say, damn it, boy, somebody had to lose. It was you today. So no matter what happens, no matter who wins, no matter who loses, somebody's going to always be upset. Somebody's always going to be happy. And just that's what it, that's just how it goes. But we are resilient people. You know, we will get over it, and hopefully we will figure out a way to, you know, get past all these hurt feelings and move forward and move on. And yeah, throughout it. No, go ahead.
Sorry. I'll say, for those people that are hurt, many people are happy. I think we're just doing a yin and yang today.
Yeah.
And
this is a great segue into our topic today, because all of this election talk, and I wonder what happened to people's, what happened to those New Year's resolutions? Did they start on them? Were they delayed? Is it harder to start on them if they were delayed? Did people even, like, was 2020 so catastrophic that people just said, did we all just say, hey, I'm just glad I made it out of it, and and I'm not thinking about a resolution. I'm not going to say that 2021 is going to be my blow up year. I'm not going to say anything. So you had an awesome, you had a good idea today to talk about just New Year resolutions, setting realistic New Year's resolutions. What happens when, you know, why don't people follow through? You know, why don't they make it? Why do fewer make it than others don't? You know, so go ahead. Let me know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to bring that stuff up towards the beginning of the year. I think, I don't know how many people struggle with the January, is it too late to say Happy New Year because it's January 15th, the 20th. But also just thinking about the whole idea of it being a new year and setting goals or setting a new tone for the year. I think it's it is interesting to think about 2020, because I imagine the beginning of 2020 last year, people were probably like the UZR, set their goals and didn't really know how the year was going to look. And I mean, research suggests a good number of people that set New Year's resolutions, I think it's like 73% of them, don't actually end up completing them anyways. So I get curious around this type of year, not that I just expect people not to complete them, but what are the new vibes? What are the goals that people have? And then I think it's useful for us to think about what gets in the way. I think there are lots of things from my standpoint, or from the performance, like peak performance standpoint, that stop people from really hitting a goal that are helpful for people to consider this year. Do you do resolutions or goals, or how's it looking?
Man, no. I think for me, no, I don't. I think my issue with the New Year's resolution is, like, I don't wait until the beginning of the year. I don't wait to a set time to decide to change, because I don't know if I'm going to make it to the beginning of the year. Like, I'm always thinking about the here and now. It's something that I tell my kids all the time, particularly my daughter. I tell my daughter all the time that every day is a day that you could make a choice to do something different that could change your life.
Right.
Every day that you wake up is a day that you can make a different choice and change your life. And if something happens that you feel lazy, or you don't get up, or you don't go exercise, it's okay, because guess what? The next day, tomorrow, is another new day that you can still turn it all around. So it's like my perspective on life is the here and now, because tomorrow, I think that's the biggest problem with all of us, and myself included, when I was younger, which is why I am not as spiritually or emotionally developed as I would like to be. Because in my 20s, it was like, I do it tomorrow. I can just do it tomorrow. It'll be my New Year's resolution. It's November now. I'm going to go ahead and keep on drinking. And then in January, I'm going to flip it all around. Like, so I kept putting stuff off. And the next thing I know, I was 30. And the next thing I knew, I was 35. And the next thing I knew, I was 40. So it's like, time is something else. You blink your eyes and 5 years will go by. So like, now that I'm on the other side, I don't know if I want to say other side, It's like I'm 43 now. I'll be 44 in August.
On the other side, man.
I figured I call the other side when you pass 50. Okay. I'm standing on God gonna give me 100 bill, 100 years strong. So, you know, I had 3 knee surgeries. My hip hurt when it get cold. You start thinking about time differently when you get old. Stuff start cracking and creaking and cropping and hanging and sagging. And I'm exercising like I used to when I was younger, but I'm not firming up. Like when that kind of stuff happens to you, you start to think about time differently. And you start to put a little bit more pep in your step.
Yeah.
Well, some of us, I think that you either go one way or the other. You either decide, nah, I ain't forget it. It ain't happened by now. It ain't going to happen. Or some of us feel like, well, hey, I still got breath in my body. You might as well go and rock and roll and try it.
It's true. I think, man.
Well, wait. First, do you set your resolutions?
Okay. Well, yeah, I do. I don't set resolutions, but I set goals. So, I kind of see the difference in a resolution and a goal. I mean, I'm sure people kind of conceptualize them the same. It's like, this is what I do. This is my philosophy of how I'm going to operate this year. But for the sake of goals, I do. And before I get to like what I do, I haven't done them this year yet, but generally what I do, I'll get to that in a second. But I don't know if you remember the first time you actually wrote down a goal. I remember the first time I actually wrote down a goal. Like in my younger years, you know, on the other side of the fence, as you say, I've had a lot of different gigs, a lot of different sales gigs and different jobs where there's a intentional conversation about goals. And I remember when I was like 26, I was getting towards the time I was getting out of the military, I was going through a transition where I really need to think about what's my life going to be about, how it's going to be different in this next chapter. And I created a vision board. You know, vision boards were like all the craze then. I'm gonna put something there so I can see it, and that'll visually represent where I want things to be. It was my first time creating it. I don't know if I really thought it was going to work or not, but I got excited about the idea and put things on there so I could see it. And that was the first time I actually wrote down a goal. And that time I was 26 and I was thinking about, you know, becoming an old man. To me then, that was 40. I was like, all right, so when I get 40, what is it that I want? And one of the goals I wrote down was I will be, something along the lines, I'll enjoy making over $100,000 a year by the time I get 40. That was the first goal that I remember writing down. And I'm 41 now. And I just kind of reflected on that last year when I did my taxes and realized that I did beat that number. And I don't know if it's because I wrote it down that I hit that number or not, but I do think there's power in writing goals down. Agreed. And this is why, okay? I think that I don't want people to become obsessed with every move they make and all the goals they set down. But what I've learned is that we're goal-oriented creatures, whether we write down goals or not. But that doesn't mean we don't need to write goals down. I think of our mind as very deep, and there's lots of stuff going on in our mind. Like the analogy that I've heard used is before, it's like the ocean. Think about the ocean, it's deep, it's murky. You really don't know what's all in it until you end up swimming in it for some reason. You'll find there's lots of sea creatures, there's maybe sharks, there's a whole bunch of things that are in that deep, murky water. But when it comes to goals, that's how your mind works. There's a whole bunch of other things that drive you, a whole bunch of other things that motivate you. If you don't take the time to write down what your goals are, then whatever are the biggest things on your mind that have been created by circumstance and experience, those are gonna be the goals you go towards. Those are not always the goals you want to go towards. Sometimes they're things that we've heard from people that have been unfortunate, like, hey, you're not going to amount to much. You're not worth much. You know, the fears that we have, I'm not enough, I'm not going to be enough. And those actually end up being the goals we go towards. We don't complete things. We start and then we don't finish. And anyways, if you're not really thoughtful about whatever goals you have, the analogy is, when you say, I'm going to do this particular small goal that you haven't been thinking about, haven't been working on, haven't really been put in your ocean so that it can survive, it's like dropping a goldfish into an ocean of sharks. These sharks have been created by your environment, all other things. How do you expect that little goldfish to survive? How it survives is when you write the goal down, it's not just writing it down, but write it down, put it in your consciousness, have yourself visually aware of it on a daily basis. It would be like feeding that goldfish, and if fish could change from one fish to another, giving it the opportunity to grow into a shark by feeding it every day. And that's how it can be something that you move towards. But if you're not conscious about it, then whatever else is in your mind is going to take control. Those are going to be the goals you move towards.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like the idea of just reminding us all how much is going on in our lives. And we need focus. Like, we need something to remind us to stay on the, to like, to stay on the beaten path. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we sort of, I think we have it in us. We know what to do. We have it in us. It's just staying focused to do it long enough. I remember Milton, Milton Erickson. He tells this story. I know he had polio, but like, I think he had polio, but like before he had polio, him and his friends were playing. They were playing outside and they saw a horse with no rider, and it got away from whoever was riding it. I don't know if you've heard this story or not. So he told us, he settled the horse down. He got on the horse and he asked his friend, said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm gonna take it back." So what he did was he got on the road and he just started riding back on the road the way it came from. And every time the horse would try to veer, he would steer, he would just kind of give it a little pull, a tug, and he would steer it back. And every time it would veer, he would steer it back. And then eventually he just kept it on the straight path. And then all of a sudden he saw a barn, and the horse rode to the barn. And the guy said, "How did you know we lived here? We don't even know you." And he said, "You know, I figured the horse knew where it lived. I just kept it on the path. And he uses that story to talk about what the job of a therapist. The job of a therapist is, you have it in you. It's our jobs to help you dig and keep you on the path until you dig to the place where your ailment came from. But in this context, I like the notion or idea of, you need something to tug you back on the path because there's so many things going on around you. There's a tree. Like, if you're the horse, there's a tree, there's another horse, there's an apple tree, there's all this other stuff you want to get into, but you need something to keep you focused. And I love what you said, that idea of writing things down. I think the first time I wrote something down was I was in college. I think I was a freshman or a sophomore in college, and I wanted to have a 4.0. So I wrote it down and I put it all over my room. And at the time, I went to some seminar. I went somewhere, I read something, but it's a quote that stuck with me almost 20 years later. It's called "The Power to Define." You know, you never let anyone define you. If they define you, they can control you. If they can control you, they can destroy you. Like, you have the power to choose and the power to define who you are. So I love that. And then that got me on a path to sort of trying to set goals. So I wrote that quote down, and I wrote that I wanted a 4.0 on another sheet of paper, and I put them up, I taped them to the wall, because my problem is I love naps. Even now, as an old man, I love naps. So whenever I would lay down, I would look up and I would see it. And it's funny how seeing it every day, consciously and subconsciously, it influenced my behavior. I initially wanted to lay down and take a nap. But when I saw it, it made me go, "Man, damn, let me get up." And I would get up and I would study for another hour, or I would get up and I would read something, or I would. So seeing it is that spur that you need when you want to go off the path, to get back on the path, get back on the straight and narrow. So that is so important, this notion, idea of writing things down, you know, from a superficial level. I think on a deep structure level, I believe in vibration. I believe in manifestation. I think that your thoughts and your ideas are real things. And I believe, and again, for anybody out there that's listening that may hear this, these are just my personal beliefs. So it's not to offend anybody, but it's just the way that I think about life and spirituality. I truly believe that your thoughts and your ideas are real things. Vibrations are real. And I think to make things real and make things happen, you have to say them and you have to write them down. You have to manifest them physically. It's not enough to just have an idea in your head. Like, for me, at least, it's not enough for me to have it in my head. I have to speak it and I have to write it down because it goes from something abstract to something concrete. When it's written down in a concrete form and when I speak it, I believe that our words are vibration. I think that's the only reason that we have vocal cords is, again, a way, it's a, our vocal cords are a vehicle to get our consciousness to the outside, to get what's consciously inside our head to the outside. So you got to manifest it somewhere. And like you said, I think writing is the easiest way to do it.
And I want to say a little bit more about that. So, like, I know that many people agree with you there and think that there's a metaphysics to it. And I don't know if I'm, like, fully on that camp, but let me tell you what I do concur with. I concur with the idea that thoughts create motivation and create energy. Okay, so, like, if you spend enough time on them, they'll create energy in certain ways. And whether we want to look at things like anxiety, and see that anxiety, generally what it is, it's a manifestation of energy based on, if we use a cognitive perspective, some thoughts that you're having that are causing a physiological response. So that could be used in the same way it's used for that, it can be used for other things. And then when you really start, you write something down, to me, the reason you write it down is not because, you know, Uncle Joe said you need to write goals down, or, you know, Suzette or somebody, it's because when you write it down, and that's not the only thing, and then you start to focus on it, you bring it into your awareness often enough to get some energy to create some actions around it. And when you create actions around it, a number of other things will happen. I remember back in 2010, when I first decided I wanted to do some form of coaching. I got it in my head. I was really excited about the idea. I started thinking about all the possibilities, how I can make it happen. I created a Facebook page, and then I started putting a cosign and different things, and things that I still do to this day. But at that point, it was just the beginning of a seed of thought. And I had this idea about this coaching thing I wanted to do. It just started. I just wrote it down. I was thinking about it a lot. Didn't have a plan on how to do it. But then I ended up running into a colleague of mine that I went to school with. He was in my mental health counseling program. He was in school counseling, but we took some of the same classes. And he happened to have an opportunity at some of the public schools he was working at for a contract doing coaching. And I'm not gonna say energy like specifically brought that, but when my mind was open to these awarenesses, opportunities became more readily available. I think the other thing that happens is sometimes opportunities are right in front of our face, but since we don't think about it often enough, we can't see it. It's just like a person that happens to be good at a craft, or maybe sometimes people think, well, they might be good at it, but they should turn it off sometimes. Like maybe a professional helper. They can see lots of cues in somebody when they talk and how they do things because they pay so much attention or think about these things so often that they don't miss them. Yes. The same thing with opportunities. If you're thinking about the opportunity most of the time, you're going to be more likely to see when the opportunities present themselves. And you might just equate that to energy. Maybe it is, but also it's being aware of the opportunity and walking into it when the door opens.
I like that. First, let me give a quick station identification. Again, this is Marshall University, WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. Again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And we're talking about New Year's resolutions. What are the things that facilitate and perpetuate and help our goals, and what is good goal setting? And what are some of the things that could hinder that? Okay. Something I want you to, maybe you can talk about now, we can put a pin in and talk about later, is a notion or idea of, you talked about seeing ideas. I wonder how much of recognizing an opportunity is related to my perspective or my opinion on myself, like my belief in my self-efficacy, like my belief in my ability to do that thing. So it's like, maybe coaching came about because you believed that you could be a good coach. And because you believed that you could be a good coach, you saw the opportunity. But like, say for instance, I want something to happen in my life, but I don't really think I'm any good at it. I wonder how all of those things are intertwined and play an important part in how we perceive the world. When I think that I am capable and I am able, I think that seeing myself as a capable individual is also what plays a part in what I think could be a possibility. Like, like what's a possibility? Like, you see what I'm saying? I see possibilities very differently. If I think I'm capable, I'm like, man, I could do that. I could turn that into this, this, and that. you know?
Right.
So I wonder how much of identifying is exactly what you just said. It's that energy, but it's also coupled with this notion or idea that, you know, and this is what I want to get to with goal setting, setting realistic goals, setting goals that I am capable of. And I was going to ask you something to talk about, if not now, a little bit later, right? Put a pen in it and write it down to make sure we get to this. How much of it is we set goals, and I know this sounds horrible, how much of it is we set goals that we can't achieve, that we don't have the tools to achieve? We set unrealistic goals. How much of goal setting is unrealistic, and how much of it is it's realistic, but I don't have a plan? I don't have a map or outline or a plan. And it could be some of all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I'm gonna come back to that. I want to go back to the first thing that you were talking about with this whole idea of confidence. So if I think about some of the blocks, we're kind of mixing and matching the information here. But I think one of the biggest blocks to people actually setting goals, whether it's like just set them mentally or writing them down, is one's a belief in their ability to do it. And I think there's lots of things that influence that, you know, things that you've experienced growing up, like what kind of support systems and resources you've had. You know, it's going to be easier for somebody who grows up with more resources economically and maybe family members who own businesses to believe that they can be a business person than somebody who's never seen that, never had those resources, or has not been in a situation where they've been comfortable taking a risk. So if I don't feel like I can be good at whatever profession that I might have a longing to do, then that's going to handicap my ability to really set an effective goal in the first place. Because first of all, my goal is going to be somewhat incomplete. It's going to start out with, instead of being very specific about what kind of profession I have, I want to be happy, which is too vague. There's no way for you to really define it. And a goal undefined is a goal unaccomplished. So, but the reason sometimes people, I think, start out so vague is because, one, they don't have a good idea of exactly what they want to do, but then, two, is they don't have the confidence. It's scary to try to get specific. Because if I get specific and I really can't do it, then that means I fail. So let me just stay in the land of vagueness, and I'm comfortable there. Oh, I didn't get it. I didn't get happy this year. But I wasn't happy last year, and I never really defined it, so it's not like I failed any worse than I failed last year. So I think your disbelief in your ability to do something really hinders your ability to write a goal in a fundamental way that's actually objective.
I like that. I like that a lot. So what is the issue with what goes? What do you think? What goes wrong? If you could tell people one or two things, one or two issues, like you said, that number is staggering. Like, pretty much 3 out of 4 people who set goals, they're wasting their time. Like, they never, not their answer, said they never achieve those goals. So what are a couple of reasons why? What are a couple of the main reasons why you believe people start a goal and don't finish it? Either don't start it at all, or start a goal and don't finish it, or they just don't achieve the goal. Those are sort of 3 different things. Some people don't start. I think some people start and just quit. And I think some people, they try, but they just don't make it. So, like, but just what are a couple of reasons when it comes to these New Year's resolutions, and not just New Year's resolutions, goal setting in general, what are a couple of things that you think, a couple of mistakes that you see people make?
I think if I was sitting down and giving a seminar on this, I could come up with a whole bunch of different things. For the brevity of time, I think I'll just try to narrow it down to 3 basic things. I think it comes down to something that's consistent with a therapy theory called motivational interviewing, which basically has to do with people's ability to change. Usually it's with addiction, but the ability to change behaviors overall. Because when we're talking about setting a goal, you set a goal with the purpose of changing something. So what stops change? And motivation interviewing says it's basically 3 things that get in the way. Your readiness, like how ready are you to do this particular action or set this goal or to do the behaviors that are necessary to do the goal. Willingness, do you have the motivation to do this thing right now? And do you think you're able? And the biggest one is able. So it goes back to that whole belief thing. The reason that people might say, this is the year I'm not going to smoke anymore. A lot of times these goals are about stopping a habit that you have that it's not healthy, hasn't been good for you. So maybe it's smoking, maybe it's eating a certain kind of food, sugar or some There's usually some type of gain to that behavior. You smoke because you've gotten used to it over the years. You have some type of maybe physical, psychological dependence on it. Can't give up Starbucks for the same reason. That's why you like Krispy Kreme. All these different things like that. So you could say you want to give it up, but the last part, do you really think you can give it up? If you don't think you can, then you're dead in the water. Like, even if you say you're going to do it, your efforts are all going to be diminished. That's the first one that I would have people work on if they were going to think about those three. Do I think I can? And if you think you can't, then how can you get some help to better equip you to be able to answer that question, I am able?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how much of it is, I think about, I don't go to the gym. I work out at home. I used to go to the gym, and it's interesting because at the end of the year, you would hear all of the regulars complain about, all this place is going to be packed next week, you know? And I'm saying this from my observations of when people go to the gym. I think that people have great intentions, but it's what I see are people trying to accomplish their goals in an unrealistic way. You ain't been in this gym in a year, you're gonna die. You ain't been in here in a year. You come in here and you stay in here 2 hours. You lift ungodly amounts of weight to a point that you can't even lift your arms. You're sore for the next 2 or 3 days. And then it's kind of like, I'll see people lift and then they'll go and look in the mirror. And I'm like, you look the same as when, what are you looking in the mirror for? Like, this is, you're not going to change. Like, you just, like, change takes time. And I think that that's important. One, I wonder, do we, myself included, you know, when I set goals, I try to make sure that they're realistic. It is something that I have the resources and the ability to achieve. I can't say that, you know what I mean, I don't have a job, but I'm going to be a millionaire next year. Like, we have these goals, but the question is, am I in a position? Do I have the resources to achieve this goal? And if I don't, how can I put myself on the path to, and that's what you did. You was like, I want to make $100,000. And then you slowly started to put yourself on a path to acquire skills to make that happen by a certain age. You went and got a master's. You went and got some work experience. You went and got a doctorate. You start coaching. You start doing things with this long-term goal in mind. And I think that a part of the problem is, you know, we jiffy pop. You know, we popcorn, like, we microwave babies. Like, we want it to happen now. Nobody wants to put it in the crock pot and come back 8 hours later. Like, we want it to happen now. And real change takes time. And that, like, for me in fitness, that was something that I had to, that was just something I had to accept. And that was the hardest thing to accept, was I had to learn patience. And I had to learn, it's not going to happen today or tomorrow or next week or next month or probably the next 6 months. But I have to be consistent. Am I willing to do the same thing? You know, am I willing to do the same thing 5 days a week? Because this goal means so much to me. The question is, how much does the goal mean to you? And does getting in shape mean more to you than snacky cakes and popcorn? And because when it hurt and your arms are sore and, you know, you had a hard day at work, the couch looks good and snacky cakes look good at that point.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points there. And I think it speaks to the whole, once you start to make a behavioral change, you're going through a process, right? And I can appreciate the gym example, because before COVID shut down, I was pretty regular at the gym, and now, yeah, I don't want to talk about it. But eventually gyms will be back open. But that is true. You know, people start out, they go in, they hit the gym hard, and then after that first day, or if they're lucky, first week, they can't even open up their hands to put the key in the ignition. They're like, oh, I got to rest. Rest one day, turns into 5 days, turns into a month, they don't come back. I think part of it then is also the follow-up. It's like when you decide that you're going to make a behavioral change, it is recognizing that you're going to activate a plan, then you need to reassess the plan. If the plan doesn't work, then you create a new plan, then you do the plan, then you reassess again. people start with the first plan. First plan doesn't work for whatever reason. That's it. And some of it brings a lot of shame. Like, oh, I didn't even make it through the first week. I might as well just wait till next year. Like, oh, this is like how it usually goes. And it's in the same, it would be similar to how you think of somebody who goes through a relapse cycle when it comes to addiction. Like, it's a hard struggle because you have to go through many processes before you might actually get clean. That might be how it is for behavioral changes, because there's a lot of reasons that we do the other behavior that we do. I think it's interesting with the conversation about goals being realistic and or not, because yes, they need to be realistic. I find though that there's also a segment of people that the goal being realistic is not necessarily the problem for them. The problem is that they're too afraid to set a goal because it's not realistic to somebody else. So this is one thing it's a hard struggle. Whenever I get somebody, I remember I just teach this class called personal effectiveness, and we talk about these things when I was at Miami-Dade College. And I get a lot of students telling me about their dreams and their goals. And no matter what goal I heard them say, I would be, because I'm not in an advisor role, I'm just, you know, we're talking to this class about personal growth. Whatever goal they would tell me, I would say, okay, you know, you can put a plan, then you can achieve it. Doesn't matter. Tell me you want to be a millionaire. Tell me you want to be a gazillionaire, whatever it is. Even if they don't have a penny to their name, because it's not my job in that context to tell this person what they can do. Because the other thing is, not everybody has eyes for your vision, right? Not everybody can see your vision. Within that vision, though, once you tell somebody, you start working on it, work the plan, reassess, work the plan again. I think what was helpful when we go back to the example of that goal that I wrote it at 26. And you have to remember, when I wrote it at 26, I didn't have a master's degree. I didn't have a doctorate degree. I didn't know those things were coming. I didn't even really put together that maybe that helped with the plan until I thought about this like last year. But the whole idea is I didn't know how. I just said, like, this is what I want. A lot of times people get stuck up on, well, I can't write the goal because I don't know how. That's not what you're trying to do yet, bro. Like, write the goal first and then get somebody to help you work it out. I do agree that you have to work on making sure it's realistic, but I also think there's a corner of people that have grown up defeated, bottom of the barrel, having people tell them they can't do nothing, they won't be able to do anything, and that get shunned in some way whenever they shine. So people are trying to break their, you know, trying to basically take out their bright light, and they were meant to be illuminating.
Yeah, I think I should probably rephrase that. Not that goals are unrealistic. I think that people take, sometimes I think we take unrealistic steps to achieve goals. So it's not I truly in my heart believe this, that anybody who has achieved anything great, and greatness is a personal thing, anybody that has achieved greatness, a part of it takes a little bit of narcissism and a little bit of crazy. You have to believe, you have to be crazy enough. I'll never forget it. My father bought a lottery ticket once. It's funny how the smallest things, man. If I told this story to him, he would not remember it. I might have been 6 years old. He got a dollar and some change back. We was in a convenience store, and he said, "Give me a lottery ticket." He just had a dollar. It was just a dollar left. And I was like, why would you buy a lottery ticket? You're not going to win. Like, I'm 6 years old. He looked at me and said, "Somebody got to win." And that never left me. And it's weird how the smallest things, people can say and do the smallest things that completely revolutionize the way you think about the world. And that has driven everything, and I mean everything, that I have done in life. Is they got to pick somebody. Why not me? My motto in life has always been, why not me? Somebody got to be rich. Why not me? It's always been, why not me, why not me, why not me? And it all goes to that one day in that convenience store on Shelby Drive in Memphis. I will never forget it. It is so vivid in my head. Somebody got to win. If I ask him now, he'll say, "Boy, what did you, shut up talking to me. What are you talking about?" He would have no idea. He'd have no idea. But like, anybody, to achieve anything great, I think that there has to be a small bit of narcissism, just a pinch for some people, just a pinch. It's just a pinch, and you have to be crazy enough to believe, why not me? you know. But like I said, my thing is, I don't think that they're unrealistic goals. I think that there may be unrealistic ways of achieving those goals. You know what I'm saying? You can't say, I want $100,000, I want to be a millionaire, and you ain't trying to get a job, you ain't trying to look for a job, you're not trying to develop skills, you ain't trying to develop resources. It's just going to fall in my lap one day. Again, one of my favorite Bible verses, faith without works is dead. You can pray all day and to your God or the universe or whatever it is you believe in, but it ain't going to happen until you get up and do something. You have to do something. You have to do something. So I like that everything that you said is just totally, totally on point. Again.
Yeah, and I want to highlight what you're saying about the action. I think that's really important. You know, when you talk about someone going to the gym, because that's the expectation. You know, we want quick results. That's why your person like looking at the gym, like, oh, did I lose some? Oh, no, yeah, you know. We want quick results and not everything. The crock pot analogy I really like, you know, like if people can think about this, whatever, I'm talking about bigger goals now. I'm not like a long-term goal, but like the goal that your life is based on. Like the question I like to ask people is, why are you here? You know, like it's a deep question. People start to like, but even when I get students, you know, I was talking to a student the other day who wants to do research, and he's a very bright student. Seems like he's, you know, going to be a phenomenal researcher in the future. And, you know, I'm not a big researcher anyway, so I'm not sure why the kid's talking to me about it. But since he was talking to me about it, I'm like, all right, look, I'm thinking, how can I help this kid on his journey? Research is not how I can help him, but I can probably help him another way. So I asked him, like, okay, well, what is it that you want to do? Like, why? He told me what he wanted to do, but why do you want to do this? Which I just think is a basic question that you should start out with. I mean, pause. Literally, he had not thought about that question yet. And I was like, well, once you get the why, you know, what is in this process for me, or how am I going to contribute, or how does this line up with who I am? Then that's going to help you get through all the hard nights. So this person talking about they want to go to the gym. What keeps me going to the gym is, one, I have chronic back problems. Two, before I was kicked out because of Rona, the other thing was I want to be able to fight Rona. So, like, I have some reason. It's not just, like, it's something that's going to flourish and go away. So I have a compass to put my other goals on. So if you have some bigger goal, some bigger vision that you start out with, that you can lean your other goal on whenever you come into challenges, that's how you get over the challenges. What's in it for me is how you're going to overcome the long periods. You know, you got a PhD. We know many people that have advanced degrees. And in order to, not that it's just about a degree, whether it's a business or whatever you do, you got to go through some struggles, right? And you have to ask yourself why you're going through that struggles. Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You have to, that can make it easier.
That reminds me of when Deion Sanders was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he tells this amazing story of he was embarrassed. His mother would push, I think she pushed carts in the hospital. And when he was a kid, he was embarrassed of it. And he told himself that my mother's never going to have to push carts again. You know, and that drove him to become arguably one of the best defensive backs to ever play football ever. And he said that everybody needs to check their dreams. If your dreams aren't bigger than you, then it might be something wrong with your dream and you need to check it. And again, that's something else. So again, that takes me back to your why. What is the meaning that is attached to your why? And is your meaning and purpose, you know, how meaningful is it? Is it superficial, or how deep does it run to your identity? How deep does it run, you know, in regards to your love and affection for others? Like, your why of why you're doing this and what it means to you, I think that is what will drive you through the rough periods that will come. There will be days that you want to take a nap. There are going to be days you don't feel like going to the gym. There are going to be days that you don't feel like doing therapy. There are going to be days that you don't want to take your medication. Those days will come. And what is your why? What is it that drives you? And it has to be, like you said, there's a reason. Like for me, I've had knee surgeries, more than one. And the doctor told me, look, you got to build your quads. You're going to be hobbling as an old man. Strong knees will keep, you know, keep pressure. I mean, strong quads and legs will keep. So I have to squat. I hate it. But God forbid, my kids might have kids. I want to be able to run around with my grandkids one day if I ever have them. You know what I mean? I don't want to be in a wheelchair. I don't want to be on a walker. Like, I want to be, you know what I'm saying? I want to be active. You know, so those are the sort of things that it's bigger than me. It's bigger than superficial. It's bigger than just wanting to look good. You know, there's a meaning, a true meaning and purpose behind the why that drives what I do. And, you know, maybe that's why it's so easy to give up the gym. You know what I mean? Especially if you already married or you got somebody and they like you and you know what I'm saying? And you're not in shape now anyway. They're already with you. You already got a life. They already love you. So it's kind of like, what is the why? I see, hey, it's single dudes like me. I be in there working out a whole lot harder than them people that got a husband or a wife or a partner at home because I'm trying to catch somebody. It's different. It's different. Like, I asked a friend of mine, and I'll cut off with this. I asked a friend of mine, why do you, he loves college. He loves college more than professional football. And I said, why? He said, because they try harder. I said, what do you mean they try harder? He said, they may be more talented in the pros, but in college, they're trying to make it. And to me, it feels like they just try harder. Like, when you're trying, you're truly trying to make it. You know, like I said, I heard somebody say once in the UFC, it's hard to get up and do a training camp, and then you sleep on satin sheets. Like, I want to come in here every other day or every day or every other day and work out. And when it get rough, them days get rough, you be like, man, my wife like me. She kind of like this chub I got on me anyway, man. Big, you know what I'm saying? Like, but like I said, I see single dudes in there. They be working it out because they trying to catch somebody.
Yeah.
Like, how strong is your why is the point that I'm trying to make.
Well, I think it's a good point. I think that when we come down to everyday goals, people have bigger goals, smaller goals based on who they are. I just have one story that people might relate to. Before that point, it's probably when I became 30, when it became solidified for me what my overall vision in life was. And before that, I knew I've always been ambitious. I knew I wanted to have my own thing or my own business. And I did lots of different things to try to satisfy that. Like, you know, I sold vacuum cleaners out of vans. I used to sell this stuff called prepaid legal, which is like a subscription thing. I used to was a mortgage broker for a period of time. I did tons of little, sold Cutco knives, lots of different things, right?
Done all this stuff by 40? How many lives have you lived? I mean, I thought I worked a lot of jobs.
I've done a lot, my friend. Those are just the ones I'm willing to share. But all of those had the same theme of I was trying to be able to create something for myself. But they were all things that didn't necessarily go together. One sales job to another sales job. The only thing they had in common was sales and being able to do it on my own. It wasn't until I discovered, really got to delve into this idea of coaching and what it meant in terms of helping people and helping others. And once that happened, I could change everything. You know, coaching was the beginning and then psychology sparked from there. But it became consistent after that. And that changes everything. And so I think some people just might be at that stage. They have these goals that are wrapped around and not connected to something yet. And they're still going through and discovering. You might need somebody to help you work that out. But once you get consistent, then that's when things will change, you know. And the little things you do, once they're, you make them intentionally a part of the bigger picture, you'll be more effective.
So let me ask you this real quick. Backtrack. Coaching came before psychology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did you become a psychologist to help make you a better coach, to understand the human mind and behavior to help you become a better coach? Or did you just sort of fall into it and was go, wow, this is the tool that I need to make me a better coach and facilitator? Have you thought about, like, That's interesting. It's interesting to hear which one came first and how. Yeah. Obviously, to become it, like, you are obviously probably a more efficient coach. You know more about people that you've become a psychologist now. Like, I just think that's interesting how it led there to you, like how you were sort of led.
Yeah, I guess it was. I was in a master's program for Collins. I guess it kind of happened at the same time. But when I was in that program, it wasn't necessarily revolved around, like, oh, I'm going to be a counselor. I was in the military at the time, and I knew I wanted to be a helper before I transitioned to a different university. And there was a class I took. It was career counseling. In that class, we had to create our career. But it wasn't, I mean, we had to use career assessments because it was a career class. But you could create your own class, I mean, your own career, which I thought was cool. So I had put some things together from various different sources and came up with, it was basically, the description I created was, it was sort of like a teacher, but not like a teacher that teaches at a college. It was, you know, it didn't require grading papers. It was like a personal development trainer. And then when I thought more about what that would look like practically, that's what led me to the idea of coaching.
Okay.
But as you think about just that definition, everything else that's come after fits into it. Just more and more of a quote unquote legitimate, you know, professor or psychologist. But all under this guise of helping grow people and get them in alignment with who they are and what they want to be. That was the basic first element. And okay. Then, like, how can I do that and people accept what's going to be the way I feel like I have that talent and ability, but what's going to be the way that everybody else feels like I have that, that led to credentials.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Again, another station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marshall University. Again, you're listening to Brother with your two favorite psychologists, Dr. Nate Chapman, as well as Dr. Keelan Hinton. And we're talking about New Year's resolutions, but not just New Year's resolutions, the overall idea of goal setting. What is it that makes, what are the things that are needed to help people achieve their goals? What are some of the impediments and what are some of the things that obstruct us from achieving our goals and everything there in between? So, again, we got about 10 minutes left. We got about 10 minutes left. I think that something that's important is what we realize is that sometimes the goals that we want can't be achieved today or tomorrow or next week or in 6 months, sometimes not in a year or 2 years or 6 years. I mean, it's one of the reasons they develop what they call token economies. You get an F on your report card, mom and dad say, hey, in 6 weeks, you get an A in math, we'll buy you a pony. Okay, well, I don't know if parents still buy ponies now, but we'll buy you a pony. So you start off, I want that pony real good in the first week, and then the second week, and the third week when it gets tough, you hate math so much, you're like, I didn't want a pony anyway. So they develop token economies. At the end of every week, you would get a small prize to help you last until the big prize. So maybe, you know, that's where the sticker system. Little Johnny, you did good today. You get your sticker today. You can even get your sticker and put it on today. Today's Monday. And that's rewarding to get my sticker, and it'll make me last to the end of the week so I can get my big prize. And at the end of 6 weeks, I'll get an even bigger prize. So it's like, I think incentive is so very important. Like, we have to figure out how to set up goals in a way that we get these little wins along the way to help keep us going, I like, you know, you talk about this notion, the idea of reevaluating the plan, and not just reevaluating the plan, reevaluating myself. I want to be a professional bodybuilder. That's years away, but every 6 months I look at myself in the mirror and I take a before and after picture, and I can see the progress. And like, being able to enjoy or identify or see progress along the way, some sort of way, setting up small wins, you know, being able to identify small wins along the way that seem useful to me. Maybe that's a part of it. Maybe we shouldn't say, I want to be a size 2. I want to be a size 2 eventually, and I'm a size 12. Enjoy the fact that in 2 or 3 weeks you lost 2 pounds. It might not be a lot, but it's 2 more pounds than before you started. You got to think of it that way. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're giving some great points for people to remember. I mean, you don't So when I was in the military, we used to do ruck marches and foot marches, and I never really was a big fan of them. I don't like just walking with heavy backpacks on my back for long miles. I've never been a fan of that. But how you get through it is like what they say, one step at a time, and that's basically how I do it. So I'm just going to put this foot in front of the other, because it was hard, because sometimes my feet would be hurting and I'd be ready to drop that 7-pound weapon. But how you get through it is not by thinking about the whole thing. You think about the thing at the end. There is an end goal. You do start out, if you want to get to size 12 or to a 2, then you start out with that 2 in general, but you can do some things in between. So when I talk to salespeople about setting goals, right? So let's just say that the goal happens to be that you want to sell a certain amount of cars. If you sell cars in a month, you want to sell 3 cars a month. That's a very objective goal. We can tell at the end of the month if you actually sold 3 cars or not. But you need to break this down to what you're doing daily and monthly to reach that thing. And how can you make those goals smaller like you would with a size 12, maybe when you get to a size 2? And something like sales, you could say, okay, well, what are going to be the actions that I can do that will be likely to lead to a sale? In the olden days, I don't know if they still do it, might be calling a certain amount of prospects or doing it through the internet or however it's done now. But I'm going to make a certain amount of calls every day. 100 calls. Say that's your goal. No matter what, I make 100 calls, because yes lives in the land of no. If I make 100 calls, there's going to be maybe one of those calls that turn into a yes. So the action is 100 calls a day. The likelihood that those 100 calls a day will lead into a certain amount of cars is where you get to the 3 cars. So maybe it doesn't actually lead to 3 car sales at the end, but the steady action of 100 calls should lead to a certain amount of yeses, which leads to a likelihood of getting your sales. That's how you get there. So every day you're not thinking about the 3 cars, you're thinking about the 100 calls.
That's what you just said is so important. And it's something I tell my kids all the time. Nothing in life is assured. Nothing in life is a sure bet. But there are things that you can do that can increase the probability of the things that you want to happen. That's all you can do. All you can do in this life is control what you can control. Do what you can to increase the probability of the things that you want to happen, making them happen. You can't just say, I want an A. If you study and you go to study group and you read the book, the more things you do, increase the likelihood of you getting an A. So I like that idea of you saying, like, that's a dope idea, this idea about making calls. And the more calls I make, it increases the probability that somebody will say, yeah. And that yes may be them coming in to take a look. And that may turn into a purchase. But it's like, how can I increase the probability of what are some of the things that I can control and that I can do? You know, and I think that, you know, that's all we can do.
Right.
Is just figure out what you can control. And maybe sometimes to some degree for some people, that is discouraging because they perceive that there's not a whole lot that I can control in my life. And that may be true. But even if that A is true, you have to decide I'm going to do what I can and not just leave everything up to faith. Because what I do know is if you don't swing the bat, you're definitely not going to hit a home run.
Right. I do think, you know, I always struggle with that one because it's definitely true that there are plenty of things in this world that we can't control. You know, I think even in the days when I would teach this personal growth stuff, it's kind of based on this Western philosophy that you can just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and ignores the struggles, the real struggles that people face. Yeah. It's also true, though, that a good percentage of people spend 80% of the time focus on things that they can't control instead of spending that 80% on the 20 things they can control. Yeah. Those 20 things that they can control would really make a difference. Like, oh, I hate the people I work with. They get on my nerves, and then you focus on them. Instead of like, well, what can I do to change my position at where I work?
Yeah.
That would be something you could control. And if you spent more time on that, then you change your situation or just the way you think about it.
Yeah. Agreed. I think it's, we started 15 minutes late, so we're up on the hour. I think this was helpful. And this may be something that we may have to come back to and revisit again, I think. I think that you know, breaking this down. We said a lot of really, really good stuff that it probably will be helpful if we got, like, if we sort of mapped it out and sort of gave it out in steps and stages, because we touched on a lot of really good stuff, a lot of really important things. This idea of motivation, this idea of it's not the goal that's unrealistic, but are you trying to achieve this goal in a realistic manner? Dealing with, you know, psychologically and emotionally, dealing with your goal is a long time away. What are you doing? You know, are you setting up small wins and small incentives for yourself to keep yourself going? We touched on a lot of stuff. So, and I know that that's one of the things that, what's your website? You still got your website, coachchapman.com or?
Yeah, they can go chapmantrainingandconsulting.com.
Yeah.
It's a long website, I know. ChapmanTrainingAndConsulting.com.
Yeah, and that's a place that you can find Dr. Chapman, a lot of the things that he's done. If you want him for consulting, if you'd like to get him for consulting, or just he gives a lot of great resources and information out there as well. But it may be good for us to revisit this at some point or another and sort of lay this out in steps and stages.
Yeah, I think where are you going to put this video at? Where are you going to put this at?
This will be up on mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. That's mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. And we'll talk about this after the show. I started a web page for Brother to Brother, which will be on Facebook. So Brother to Brother will now have its own Facebook page with the last three shows, definitely with the last three shows on, with the audio and video of this as well, so they'll be able to find it there. I started the page. I just need a couple of pictures and a couple other things from you. So that should be up by next week for definite. And it'll at least have the last three or four episodes up. So this will be up on Facebook. It'll be up at Mahogany Love and Light as well for those that would like to re-listen to this. As well, yeah, as if you'd like the audio, you can put it on your consulting page as well if you want to try to get it there as well.
Okay, and you guys can, once it gets there, people can drop ideas or, you know, just thoughts they have, maybe there's a specific direction that people want to go out and can build the show out that way.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so as they used to say on one of my favorite shows, Car Talk, you have wasted another perfectly good hour of your life listening to us. Hopefully we've said something, we've planted a seed, or we've said something that you found interesting that you can use to learn and grow and evolve from, hopefully. Again, this is Dr. Hinton. I send peace and blessings to everyone out there. I thank you. And as I always say, you know, as you say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. You know, when you die, make sure you die empty. Don't take any of your dreams with you. Make sure that you love the people that you love hard, and make sure you're doing something that sets your soul on fire, as I always say. And Dr. Chapman always takes us out. Peace and blessings. And we will, God willing, we'll see you next week.
I think we talked about a lot today. We talked about goal setting and what gets in the way of people setting goals, and then some things that can help people be more effective at setting goals. And I think one of the things that I just want to highlight is, I think one of the biggest deterrents to setting a goal is not actually having an idea of why you're here, not asking yourself the question, why am I here? What's my vision? My vision is to help empower people to live the best version of themselves using my knowledge of psychology. I think if you start out with a vision, like you can think about vision statements and how they work for a business, and probably that's the last time you heard one, it's your organization, it's on your badge. But what about you for yourself? And it's not to be cheesy, it's just for guidance so that you can ask yourself when you're getting ready to set small goals or big goals, does this align with who I am, where I want to be? I mean, if you're walking around this world like that example of the horse that was given, and you don't necessarily know who you are, what your goal is, your overall vision or purpose, then you're a horse that is being guided. I mean, you're a rider that's being guided by your horse. And Sigmund Freud once used the horse to be analogous to your id, which is your impulse control. I'll take it further and say that it's not just your id or impulse control. It's going to be shaped by everything in society. And so that horse can take you to the left, it can take you to the right, it can have you running in circles, losing your mind. And you'll be just like a rider that's basically sitting on the horse backwards. It's time to grab the reins and think about where you want to be in life so that you're not just being galloped around by your horse that is going to go wherever society takes you. All right, peace and love. We'll see you next week.
from the center of the Thundering Herd universe. We are the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM, Huntington.